Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
The keys were in the ignition, his toolbox unlocked. And Mus unlocked everything. And so that was like a giant panic flag that went off in my head.
Detective Andrew Godzicki with the Boone County Sheriff's Office says there's frustration when it comes to investigating what happened to Jesse Leopold.
We're having difficulty finding anybody that really knows anything firsthand. The rumor mill has really played a role.
One of the other two people that my son was hanging around was threatening him and stated that if they ever wanted to get rid of him, they would put his truck somewhere and have everyone looking in the wrong direction while they got rid of him somewhere else.
In Boone, yesterday, police discovered a second body inside a home. Police discovered the first victim just before 10 o'clock Wednesday night.
On the evening of October 13th, 2016, 23-year-old Jesse Leopold was working a shift at his job in Jewell, Iowa. He told his supervisor that he needed to go get his medication and left on a break. Jesse never returned to work that evening and never made it home, where he was living with two friends. His friends became concerned when they hadn't heard from Jesse, so they contacted his family to see if they'd heard from him. Jesse's dad, Jerry, posted on social media asking if anyone had seen Jesse or his big purple Ford pickup truck. A woman contacted Jerry to let him know that she'd seen the truck in nearby Ledges State Park. When Jerry got to the truck, he became more concerned when he found it unlocked with the keys in the ignition. This is where Jerry's journey to find his son began. It hasn't been easy, but he isn't giving up until he finds Jesse. I'm Marissa, and this is episode 106 of The Vanished, Jesse Leopold's story.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Jesse's story landed on my desk because of several listeners who live in the Boone, Iowa area. They were so inspired by Jerry's crusade to find his son that I kept getting Facebook messages and emails about Jesse. I get a lot of emails about very well-known cases, but not usually so many about a case that most people have never heard of. I got in touch with Jerry, and he was eager to get some more coverage for Jesse. He strongly believes that there are people out there who know exactly what happened to his son back in October of 2016. And he's hoping that they'll decide to come forward and that law enforcement officials will finally listen. Like so many of the people that I've covered on this show, Jesse struggled with some mental health issues, including anxiety and depression. In the past, this had led him to self-medicate with methamphetamine. Leading up to Jesse's disappearance, he'd been turning his life around and trying to distance himself from those who simply weren't positive influences on his life. Jerry told me that he and Jesse had a few rocky years due to Jesse's drug use, but that he was seeing so many positive changes.
I was actually gaining a great deal of hope and pride in my son because of the things that he was doing with his life at the point in which he disappeared. I could tell every time when he was high, and it would just burn my butt. I could tell that he didn't have that poison in him, that he was doing good. And yeah, he was stepping out of that crazy teenage mentality and maturing, and it was so hopeful to me. I was oh so looking forward to his next visit that never came.
Jesse had made the decision to move in with a couple of friends who were not meth users, and they had house rules. They wouldn't tolerate that there. Before this, he'd felt like it was too easy for him to start using again when he was surrounded by people who were doing the very thing that he was trying to escape. Jesse had recently gotten a job at a place called W&G Marketing in Jewell, Iowa.
At the time, he was working at a place that processes rabbits for food. And what he would do is sterilize the bays. He was roofing, but then he hurt his back and he needed something, still needed income. And he couldn't be humping shingles up a ladder. So he found something easier on his back and stuff for a while until he got mended up, and then he was going to go after a more rewarding prospect.
Jerry told me about the last time he saw his son.
The only thing that I saw was good color, good attitude, putting on weight. The last thing I said to him is, "You're looking great. Keep eating. I love you." And he was gone. I mean, I was expecting to see him the following weekend because he was coming down and doing his laundry on the weekends.
Jesse had been at work on Thursday, October 13th, when he left during a break around 6:30 p.m. He told his supervisor that he was going to get his medication, but he never returned. It was Jesse's roommates who first became worried and contacted Jerry.
Well, in the very beginning, his roommate called me and said that he had left work early and he was concerned about him. And he just kept blowing my phone up over a period of a couple of days. And I said, well, he's probably just stressed and out blowing off some steam or something. And he said, I don't believe so, but he wouldn't say anything definitive. And after a couple of days of that, I started getting worried. He wasn't responding to any phone calls or texts. And I put a shout out on Facebook. Hey, if anybody has seen my son's big purple truck, I'm looking for him. And the next morning, somebody got a hold of me. And they said they think they saw his truck in Ledges Park. That he had helped her daughter move or something like that, so she was aware of what his truck looked like, and there's one that looks like it in the park. And my vehicle was currently being worked on, and since I didn't have any transportation, she took me there. And lo and behold, it was my son's truck. The keys were in the ignition, his toolbox unlocked, and my son locked everything. And so that was like a giant panic flag that went off in my head. And I could get no reception down in Ledges State Park. It's a huge limestone canyon with a creek running through it. So I panicked and I drove the truck up out of the park. And the park ranger wasn't home, so I proceeded. And then I came into town here in Boone and chased down a sheriff and made my report. And then I brought the truck home and started thinking about, what am I going to do?
Jesse's truck was found unlocked with the keys in the ignition, and the boots that he'd been wearing were in the bed of his truck. It isn't believed that he had any other shoes with him when he disappeared. Jesse's phone was later located at his home. What we don't know is if he'd left it there before work, or if he'd stopped home when he left work that evening and left it behind. We know that Jerry found the truck days after Jesse went missing, and he's been able to narrow down the time frame that it was there. Jesse went missing on the 13th, and a parking ticket was left on the truck the following day. It can't be confirmed that Jesse's truck was left at Ledges State Park on the 13th, because no one from the Department of Natural Resources was on duty on the 13th. But it's believed that it may have been left late in the evening of the 13th. We do know that it was definitely there on the 14th. No one ever imagines that they're going to find themselves in this situation, or has a plan for what to do when someone goes missing. Jerry wasn't going to sit around and wait, so he went to speak with the people that he knew Jesse had been hanging around with.
My son was only hanging around like three people. One was a disabled fellow that he cleans his apartment for on the weekends, which I believe was giving him pills in exchange. And the other two were people that were involved with meth. So I went to the disabled guy's house and said, "Dude, do you got any ideas what might be going on here?" And he's the one that informed me that Jason, a fellow that one of the other two people that my son was hanging around, was threatening him and stated that if they ever wanted to get rid of him, they would put his truck somewhere and have everyone looking in the wrong direction while they got rid of him somewhere else. With that information, I turned that over to the sheriff's department. They came out and interviewed the gentleman. And since he takes such a high amount of pain medication because of his disability, they considered him not credible.
Jerry then went to track down these other two people, Corey and Jason, to see if they knew anything about Jesse's disappearance.
So I went to the other two, and Corey claimed to not know what I'm talking about. And then Jason was getting all uptight in my face, talking about my son in past tense, calling him a piece of crap and stuff like that. And I took that information to the police. Everybody they interviewed just said, "Oh, we don't know what you're talking about." And they just took that as gospel.
One thing that Jesse had been struggling with was that his medication wasn't lasting him the entire month. He had confided in Jerry about this before he disappeared. This is what often led him back to Jason and Corey for meth when he was feeling desperate.
But that was the place where my son would go and get a little bit of meth at the end of the month when he ran out of his pills, because it sort of did the same thing for him.
We know that Jesse told his supervisor that he was going to get his medication the evening that he disappeared. Well, Jerry has checked to see if he refilled his medication.
He told his supervisor that he had to go get his medication. And I spoke with the pharmacist, and the pharmacist said that he was not able to fill his prescription until the 21st. Which leads me to believe the only place he would have been going is to Jason and Corey to supplement until he got his refill. The sheriff's department said the information on the phone all supports that. That there was numerous people trying to contact him, trying to hook him up with drugs or get him to hook them up with drugs or something along those lines. And he was shutting every bit of those down, telling everybody, "I'm done with that," turning the page, moving forward.
Jerry has never been given access to the information that was on Jesse's phone, so he can only go off of what he's been told.
I have not seen transcripts. He said, "It's an open investigation. I cannot let you know what was said on the phone, but I can tell you what you have told me about him quitting the illegal drugs and trying to move on with his life is true. That everybody that attempted to get a hold of him for those reasons were shut down."
Remember the statement that Jesse had allegedly made to the disabled man that he helped? Well, he had also made a similar statement to Jerry around the same time as well.
He told me point blank, if anything ever happens to me, it was Jason and Corey and somebody that lived two doors away from there. And that's a quote straight out of my son's mouth. And 3 weeks after that, he moved up to Jewel, and 3 weeks after he moved, he was gone.
When pushed for more information, Jesse wouldn't budge.
Apparently, these threats have been going on for a while, and he just wasn't telling me. I asked him to elaborate on the statement that he made 3 weeks before he left, and he wouldn't. I know not to push him. When he says, "I ain't telling you," I mean, that's it.
Jesse's roommates claim to have no knowledge of what was going on or what may have happened, but you have to wonder if they really don't know or if they're scared. Their immediate high level of concern makes you wonder if they had some idea that Jesse was in danger. Jerry told me that they appear to be fearful.
The very next step that one of the roommates did was go to a bar and buy a pistol. And he's not a pistol kind of kid. I've known him forever. You know, he's been one of my son's forever friends.
Going back to Jesse's two other friends, Jason and Corey, something very important happened months after Jesse disappeared.
Well, so I proceeded to keep an eye on these properties because they were only two blocks from my home. And I got enough information put together to have this Jason fellow put into jail for a stolen Harley charge. And he was already in jail at that time. But they released him with two outstanding warrants on him. And before they reapprehended him on the new charges, him and his mother were found shot to death in the upstairs bedroom.
Law enforcement officials have been very hush-hush regarding the details of their deaths, which has led to a lot of speculation.
The way that was wrapped up was, they said, no foul play suspected, gun found in home, local authorities consider this case closed. But I did go and introduce myself to the family and explain to them everything that I have just explained to you. And I told them the reason I had him hemmed up on that Harley was because I know that he had information in regards to what happened to my son, and he would have told everything to keep himself out of prison. They brought me into the house. I looked at blood pools. I looked at the blood spatter. They told me what the police had said. They showed me autopsy photos. And when I discussed with them the chain of events that I felt led to this, they said that makes a whole lot more sense than what the DCI had told them, Department of Criminal Investigations. And they informed me that there was a suicide note left there, but that they would never be able to see it, nor would they ever know what the information was that was on it.
This is the official statement from the Boone Police Department regarding their deaths. After a comprehensive investigation into the deaths of Jason and Joyce Richeson, with assistance from the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation and the State Medical Examiner's Office, we have been able to rule out any suspected foul play. We do not believe that anyone else was involved with the death of either Joyce or Jason. This case is now closed. I submitted several records requests for information about the deaths of Joyce and Jason Richeson. To date, the only response that I've gotten is that the case is closed, but that they won't release any information. Many wonder why they won't release the details of the note to Joyce and Jason's family members. What was in the note that no one else can know? The timing of their deaths being so close to when Jesse went missing and to when Jason was about to be arrested again has left many questions. The lack of transparency regarding their deaths really makes people wonder. Too many questions and not enough answers. This wasn't even labeled a murder-suicide. They said there was no foul play involved, so did they both commit suicide by shooting themselves in the head? If the answer is that simple, why not just say that?
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's zocdoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
Jesse's case is one of those where there have been tons of rumors going around. Jerry has been chasing those rumors and trying to compare known facts against these stories to see what may or may not be true. Sometimes in cases like this, we even see where false rumors are spread to purposely mislead an investigation.
Everybody in all of these various storylines are all tangled up in mess. They're a tight-knit group of wannabe more. And that's all they do is move dope, do collections, rob, tears down families and communities.
Another rumor that's been circulating points to a potential motive for Jesse's disappearance.
Well, I had also heard that there was a week that he was running around with somebody that's involved in moving a lot of products. And that he went on a couple of runs with this person and became aware of where some of the large amounts come through this area. And the fact that he was going to be straight and no longer be involved in any of this made people on a higher level nervous, which my son would have never talked about that kind of thing. I mean, he didn't discuss it with me, didn't discuss it with his friends. And just because he had decided to be sober, none of that would have changed. But again, rumors. I have so many stories, but I only have so much solid evidence to back any of it up. And that was just talk.
Many of the rumors suggest that Jesse was blamed for a drug debt.
The way it all pans out, the way it seems to pan out, according to all the interviews and everything that myself and a few other people have conducted, is that Corey Miller and Jason Richardson blamed their deficit, you know, the money they didn't have for their drugs, on my son. Because my son drew a line in the sand and said he wasn't doing that stuff anymore. He's done with it. And so they put their blame on him and the person that they were getting the drugs from took it in their hands to collect. And he wound up getting beat to death. And he's just someplace around rural Boone or Fraser, which I have not been able to locate yet.
There was even a rumor going around that Jesse's body had been moved far away from Boone, Iowa.
There is one rumor that his body was relocated to New Mexico, buried in the desert.
One of the stories that Jerry kept hearing about led him to a root cellar with some very strange items inside.
There were so many rumors about my son being beat down in the country, going into seizures. They didn't know what to do. He rolled into a coma. He was being held somewhere in a root cellar. And I mean, I heard this forever and ever. And then a rumor came around that an individual had a psychic, you know, that heard too many of these rumors and had a psychic, asked psychic about, is there a dead person in my root cellar? And they came back with yes, and that came back around to me. So I just went and knocked on this person's door. And I found down inside that root cellar a temporary cot, a sledgehammer with what looked like blood on the handle, a little cooler that had like beef jerky packages stacked almost full into it, a couple lanterns hung up on the wall, one of those cable dog things like you would wrap around a tree and hook to your dog. One of those was attached to the wall down in there. And there's a big hole dug in the floor. And I probed all the dirt and everything, and I never hit anything solid. And I wanted to continue my search out there because there was rumors of him being dropped into a well and the well being covered up with junk, and that the well could possibly be inside of a outbuilding. The third time we went out there, she denied me. She said, no, this is all rumors. I'm not going to play this anymore. If you want to look anymore, it's going to take a warrant. And I don't know if you saw any of the postings from this gentleman freaking out and being all rude, and come to find out that gentleman, which has been in all of the storylines from the beginning, was in her garage telling her, don't let them. If they find anything, you're going to go down for it too.
The messages that Jerry just referenced in that clip are so highly offensive that I'm not going to read them during this episode. But if you would like to go read them for yourself, you can find them in the Facebook group that Jerry runs. There will be a link to that in the show notes. From the very beginning, Jerry was hearing these stories and passed them along to law enforcement, hoping that they would look into them further.
Because in the first few days, I had information that threats had been made. Somebody really disliked my son, and they were all associated. And this is the story I got. If we ever want to make you disappear, we're going to put your truck somewhere where everybody's looking in the wrong direction while we get rid of you somewhere else. And they didn't even want to hear it. They just said, the medications that your son is on and blah, 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 we think he killed himself in the park. And I'm like, no. He had recently made some life choices that are showing positively in his attitude, his look, his everything. There's no way. And they just keep holding tight to that. And I keep fighting for the truth.
Since law enforcement officials have been sticking to this suicide story, it's been a real struggle to get them to explore other avenues. The park has been searched for Jesse, but the only trace of him that was ever found there was his truck. I had requested records for Jesse's case, and all they sent was 4 pages with almost no information. What it did show was that the sheriff's department had searched areas of Ledges State Park with a drone. They also searched a section of the Des Moines River by boat, and months later they brought out a cadaver dog to search the park. Jerry told me about a group that came out early on to search the park with dogs.
A friend of mine contacted somebody that had cadaver dogs and search dogs, and we took that information. They said they'd be willing to help, but it takes authorities to make the request. So we gave the information to the sheriff's department because his vehicle was found at the park, which is in a rural area. And they made the request. And the search team came out to where the vehicle was parked, and the dogs were primed with the socks that my son peeled off of his feet when he left work. And they were there for about 15 minutes and said, your son did not put this truck in the park. And I'm like, but there's some bare footprints right over here. And they just said, well, he didn't float over there to walk in the creek. That they were positive that he did not put the truck in the park. And there has been thousands of people through this park. You know, a lot of people hunt ginseng, sheds off of deer, mushrooms, you know, the whole nine yards. It's a very active park. And had my son's body been in that park, it would have been found long ago.
Jesse's family and friends have continued to search for him on their own.
The majority of the searches that have been conducted by myself and a handful of others. And we just go and check public areas and the vicinities of where the rumors take us and actually knock on doors of private landowners and ask permission, which is what resulted in me finding that sledgehammer and stuff down inside of the root cellar.
During their searches, they have found items that were concerning, like a glove that appeared to possibly have blood on it. They asked the police department to come and get the glove, but they wouldn't.
The bloody gloves, they just let lay there for 2 months. I picked those gloves up, and I turned them over, as well as there was 2 pairs of... They cleared my son's truck 3 times before they fingerprinted it. And when I took all the junk out of the back of my son's truck, I came across 2 more pairs of surgical gloves laying in the back. I said they can still contain prints, skin cells, all kinds of stuff, depending on the level that you take your investigative abilities. They still haven't ran the prints. You know, it took 6 weeks or something for them to finally come out and print the truck because it was going to be repossessed, and I was screaming about a lawsuit. And they came up with a print and a half. And then they, to date, have not ran them through APHIS.
They fingerprinted the cab of Jesse's truck and only found 1 full fingerprint and a partial print. Jerry thinks it's strange that there were only 2 prints found in the truck. Remember, he drove Jesse's truck out of the park that day and believes there's a good chance that those are his prints that were in the truck. If they are Jerry's prints, did someone wipe down Jesse's truck before leaving it? We can't be sure because it's over a year later and they still haven't run the prints. While they were searching the area where they found the glove that looked bloody, they found more concerning items.
The sheriff's department had already searched the property because those folks got evicted. And I went out and searched the property with a couple of people. And we turned up 2 .45 casings in front of the garage. And I turned them over to the Boone PD. And then I talked about this with the sheriff's department. And they said, oh, they're shooting guns out there all the time. There's casings everywhere. And so I went back out with my party again and started looking for more casings. And we couldn't find a single one. So there's a lot of supporting evidence to these stories. It's just getting the person that they consider reliable or firsthand. A lot of it is dismissed on the fact that it's third party. And a lot of it is dismissed to the fact that a person may have had drug charges at one point or another. I keep explaining to the authorities that it wasn't nuns and school teachers and lawyers that killed my kid. It was a bunch of druggies. And I said, the only ones that are going to know the truth are the druggies, so you need to be listening. I mean, if they're going to risk themselves living the life that they do and still feel compelled to come forward and talk to you, you should listen. Probably with a stronger ear than from anyone else. I mean, they're not comfortable with the police because of the way they live. And yet they're compelled to come forward and try to help, and then they're just dismissed and treated poorly.
Since I spoke to Jerry a couple weeks ago, they also found a bone during one of their searches. They've turned it over, and they're waiting to find out if it's a human or animal bone.
Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com.
The meth trade in and around Boone is a huge part of the story, and Jerry believes that it's the reason that his son is missing. The lack of assistance from local law enforcement officials has been a constant frustration, not only with Jesse's case, but also when others have tried to report drug activity.
I've spoken to so many people that have repeatedly reported drug activity and never got anybody to respond. In one instance, the police were called numerous times. And they never got any response. Nobody ever showed up. Nobody ever did anything. So the neighbors got smart and called the fire department. And when the fire department rolled up, they had to clear the place for fire. And the discovery was made. They were running a meth lab and had children in there. Lo and behold, it happened to be the sister of one of the deputy sheriffs. I think there's a lot of blurred lines around here that need to be looked at from a higher perspective.
Due to all the issues that Jerry has had with local police, he's now hesitant to even go to them for help anymore.
I've pretty much quit trying to deal with the local authorities, and I am just pushing and pushing and pushing to try to get somebody that has the authority to step in here and do what needs done. Whether it be the FBI or the Attorney General, I've been lied to, and it's ridiculous. In the first week, I asked the in-town police. I know we don't have a lot of traffic cameras around here, but I know that there's some. Can we possibly review those to see if my son's truck turns up on it? And if so, enhance it enough to see who was driving it, since he obviously wasn't the one that put it in the park. Oh, that's not what they're for. That would be an invasion of privacy. Even bad people have rights. You know, if it was one of their children, they'd have been on it like white on rice. Or one of the affluent around town, you know.
So many people that I speak to for this show have gone their entire lives with no reason to distrust law enforcement until they had a loved one disappear. This is true for Jerry as well.
And I don't really trust the local authorities, so how can I ask people to come forward to them when I've had so many reports of them being treated rudely? The only thing they stand strong to is he killed himself in the park, and it's BS. I've screamed and cried for media attention. I've had so many people contact media. And the first step that they'll take is to contact local authorities. And that's why I've never received any coverage or follow-up, or if I do, it's very tainted and short. In the very beginning, we had an interview from the park, a couple of ladies that have been helping, and there was a lot of requesting about outdoorsmen, please keep your eyes open, people in rural areas, if you have outbuildings that you haven't been into for years, please look around. If there's any evidence of trespass, please look around. You know, that there's a possibility that he may have been dumped out in the country. They hacked everything out of that except for we're looking in the park. And then they gave a bunch of airtime to a deputy sheriff that ran me down for driving the truck out of the park. And everybody, please look in the park. That's all that came of that. So nobody in the rural areas knew to look. Nobody knew to keep their eyes open. Nobody. I mean, it was all tailor fit to the opinion of one deputy sheriff.
One agency that Jerry has gone to seek assistance is the Iowa Office of Ombudsman. If you aren't familiar with what that is, it's an independent and impartial agency that investigates complaints against any agency, official, or employee of Iowa state or local government.
We currently have open dialogue with the ombudsman. Going to the attorney general through the ombudsman would carry a lot more weight than me just going up and sitting in the hall until, and I've been told by federal authorities that don't try to handle it via a phone call. Get all your ducks in a row and just go camp out until you get your audience. It needs to be an eye-to-eye, here I am, I have a problem. There's been a lot of sidestepping and not looking at things provided. Like I said, I went into this thing with full confidence and complete transparency. And I don't trust anything anymore. It shouldn't be like that.
Jerry has also been able to get some help from someone who used to work for the sheriff's department.
There's an individual that's helping me that used to work in the sheriff's department around here. And if it were not for him, it wouldn't be progressing as it is. And when he first met me, probably 4 or 5 months into my investigation, he also was running his own investigation. And we just overlapped all of our information. And a couple weeks, maybe a couple months after we had introduced one another, you know, introduced ourselves to each other and started working together, he told me, you know, I had you pegged for one of them cop haters, the stuff you've been saying about the police and being dirty and not doing their job. But the more I look at this, the more I see that you're not. Because he's come across numerous people that have tried over and over and over to report situations and never get responses. Other than maybe all of a sudden getting dirty looks and glares from the people that they were trying to report, as if they were notified of the problem.
Whenever someone goes missing, they aren't the only victim. This show is not only about the person who's missing, but also their loved ones and the journey that they're on to find answers. This journey often takes people to places they'd never imagined they'd go, running down rumors and tips from anyone just because there's a small chance that it could be true. While I was speaking to Jerry, I wondered if he feels safe after all that's happened.
Long time ago, I said, I don't know who's going to want me dead worse. The good guys for me forcing them to do their job, or the bad guys for me trying to get them popped. I went from never locking my doors to barricading them with 2x4s. And I don't even go to the bathroom without carrying a .45. I will not be in another section of my home when somebody tries to kick the door in to get me, and my gun be somewhere else. And it's a horrible way to be. My girlfriend's none too thrilled about it either. I mean, for 428 days, I've been on the couch with a gun. and it's going to stay this way until I get this thing done. But if I don't do this, who will? And I have enough attention now that even if I were to get killed, it should continue.
Jerry dedicates his time to finding Jesse. It's his mission. When he does take a break, he finds himself glued to all the crime shows on television.
When I need to separate myself from this stuff and just sort of try to clear my head, I spend some couch time, and about the only thing that I can watch are things like Forensic Files or The First 48. And I see all the remarkable things that are done. And then I reflect on what's being done here, and it just blows me away. This isn't a lost dog.
So what happened to Jesse Leopold on October 13th, 2016? Do you agree with the sheriff's department that Jesse killed himself in Ledges State Park? What evidence is there to back that up? Dogs were never able to pick up Jesse's scent in the park where his truck had been abandoned. No one has ever come forward indicating that they saw Jesse in the park. Could Jesse have walked away from his life? I know that Jerry doesn't believe that this is possible, and Jesse didn't really have the means to take off and start over. He had just recently started working at his job, and he was due to get his first paycheck the day after he disappeared. That paycheck is still waiting to be picked up. There's no evidence that he was planning to take off, and he never mentioned such a thing to anyone. Do you think that Jesse became a victim of those involved in the meth trade? Jerry told me what he believes happened to his son.
I think that they intended on beating the crap out of him, and that it went too far, and they didn't know what to do. And then at that point, he was held somewhere to see if he was going to come out of it, and never did. And everything that I've been told is they put him down either by shooting him in the head or a lethal injection of heroin.
Jerry will continue to search for answers. If he's correct with his theory, I'm willing to bet that there's more than one person out there holding the key to finding Jesse. Jerry is hopeful that someone will come forward and end this nightmare.
That's my greatest hope right there, that somebody's going to get their thing caught, snagged up good, and they're going to barter this information about my son for their freedom or a reduced sentence.
In a case like Jesse's, where there are so many rumors, it's hard to tell fact from fiction. Are there pieces of the truth within the rumors, or are some of them being manufactured to throw off the investigation? I've gotten a little taste of what Jerry's been going through dealing with local law enforcement. I've been given the runaround myself when I tried to get more information. If you would like to follow Jesse's case, Jerry runs a very active group on Facebook called Find Jesse Leopold, Boone, Iowa. I'll include a link in the show notes. You can find Jerry there, and if you have any information that you would like to pass along, or even just an idea that could possibly help, he's very open to any help he can get. At the time of Jesse's disappearance, he was described as 6'1" tall, weighing about 180 pounds, with light brown hair and hazel eyes. That brings us to the end of episode 106. I'd like to thank Jerry for taking the time to speak with me. If you'd like to reach me, I'm on Facebook, where there's both a page and a discussion group. I'm on Twitter at The Vanished Pod, and also on Instagram. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. Join me next week. I'll be covering the case of a missing man from California. Thanks for listening.
I know that I have spoken to many people that have the same problem I've got, and I'm sure that you have as well. I mean, it's a plague. People are getting stuck in these lifestyles, and more young people getting pulled in, and once they're pulled in, they're stuck. It's vicious. I mean, I've heard a lot of human trafficking stories. I've heard corruption stories. It just goes on and on. I want so badly for this to be finished. I never in a million years thought that I'd have over 5,000 people following this on Facebook. And I get a lot of stories from them and assistants. And I'm just hoping that more people will continue to talk to more people and everybody will be less apt to turn a blind eye to the problems in their communities. And maybe some of these situations like what I'm going through will start lightening up instead of increasing. But there's so many people that are in fear and stuck, and I've just heard so much of this. Cocaine, heroin, and meth, I wouldn't even attempt to put a number on the lives destroyed over those three.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.